Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So we invite the silence. In the silence, there is peace. Silence, there is unspoken joy. In the silence, there is release from a world filled with chaos. So we embrace the silence within. And in that we find God in the silence, and we also find ourselves, not separate, but one. In our classroom, there is a little sign on the wall that says, "Silence is your perfume." And every time I read that, I smile. Because in the silence, there is peace. In the silence, there's unspoken joy. In the silence, there's release from a world filled with chaos. So we retreat into this silent place within ourselves, and we find ourselves there. Not the self that's going crazy through a reaction to a world that is truly out of control, but a silence that can accept everything, can bear everything, can endure everything. I spoke with my prayer partner this morning. It's such a sacred dance that we get to do. He gets up at 6 a.m. in the morning so that we can have this connection at the heart level. He said in Canada, there's so much smoke because of the fires. It's the size of Ireland has burned their forest land. And so we prayed for their country, for our planet, and that grace, with all of its mystery, can claim all of us. To find the good, the God, in everything. And with that little seed planted in the soil of the creative mind of the universe, I invite you to open your eyes and be here now in this space that we co-create by opening our hearts, by creating a field of energy, because it's all about energy. You know, we are the context of life, not the content. Now that sounds really vague, doesn't it? It was Locke Kelly who wrote a book called Shifting into Freedom. He said, "I used to think that my life was like the little white fluffy cloud. I was here to be nice, and where everybody's dark and gloomy, I'm here to be this happy little cloud." And then he said, "One day I woke up and I said, holy cow, I'm the sky. I'm not the cloud." And when you identify with the cloud, you see yourself as separate and you see them as other. But when you know that there's only one life here and that's what you are, well, then could I humbly say, in this incarnation, I've been given a gift. My prayer partner turned 76 yesterday, and he said, "I feel it's so funny because this is the best time of my life. Even though physically I feel more diminished than I used to," he said, "spiritually I feel more alive and connected to Source than I've ever felt." And he's found himself, once he retired from ministry, he's going back to his Catholic roots to go to a cathedral where the service is done in Latin, not to hear the preacher preach, because he said when he preaches, it's that hellfire brimstone stuff that scared the bejeebies out of me. So when the preacher starts to preach, I leave. But he said when the mass is done and the ritual is there and he does the communion, he said, "I'm back as a 20-year-old boy having that mystical union with the one." I said, "Well, good for you." He said it's all about the experience. It's not about the doctrine. It's not about having someone preach to you a message, you know, that you can order God around to get what you want. He says this isn't what we're here to do to the universe. And he says in religious science, if we're still ordering the universe around, he said that's malpractice. He said we're here to surrender and to know that that's all there is. And it's in charge. I'm not in charge. So when we wake up from the dream of me, separate from you, well, then we can experience the reality that we are all the mother and they are all our children. And guess what? You're not only the mother and they're all your children, but you're one of the children. You're everything and you're nothing all at once. Is that too big of an image for us to play with on Sunday mornings? You know, I try to stay relevant for my ministry of 34 years. And so I did this series this month called Our Walk in the World. And whatever age you are, wherever you find yourself in life, could we be honest enough with ourselves to say, what is my walk in the world? Am I walking with integrity? Am I standing for something? This Sunday is the last of the series. It's entitled Standing On and Standing For. What do you stand on? All week long, I've been asking myself this question. What do I stand on? Because what you stand on is what you're going to stand for. Because what you stand on brings your values. I stand on equality, that all people are created equal, all of them. It's so funny, there was a shooting in Jacksonville, Florida, from a neo-Nazi who hated people of the African-American persuasion, and he went into a little village, and he shot up a bunch of people. Now, he's obviously standing on a racial hatred that's systemic in our society. Once it's met, and once it's exposed for what it is, could we stand for exposing, this isn't acceptable? I saw Raphael Warnock speaking. He's a black congressman from Tennessee, right up the road from us. And he was speaking about, it's not acceptable to bring in a little sign that said guns kill our children, but you can bring your gun into the legislature. You can bring your gun in, but you can't bring a little sign in that says guns kill children. He says, what's wrong with this? He said, am I not allowed to speak my truth as an elected representative? So he's standing for a message. Could we imagine if we were a country that didn't arm ourselves against everybody? You know, that little truck, Susan Jackson, he might have a gun on that back of the truck, so I'd think twice before I spray painted it with orange paint. I'm just saying. An ounce of caution is worth a pound of cure. And when I hear people tell me that they're going to stand up to somebody who's parked in front of their house by spraying paint on their truck, I know trucks in Huntsville that they carry it on the back of the thing. Trey and I were driving down the interstate, and he got into one of those road rage things, and he's chasing after a truck who had the very thing in the back window. I said, honey, you got precious cargo in the back seat. I know I don't matter much, but could we not chase this truck down the interstate because you got your feathers ruffled by something that he did that you felt was unacceptable? Is that your walk in the world? So could we do the work on ourselves? This is the key. The first Sunday I spoke about living with meaning, living in truth, and living in kindness. So could we cultivate a life that lives in meaning? Where does meaning come from? Meaning comes from the soul. So does your life have meaning? Huh. Are you honoring this amazing soul? We were talking today. He's 76 years old. And he said, you know, I feel that this isn't the end of my life. I feel that this was the school where I grew and evolved and matured. And I said, yeah. And in the next go around, we can't even imagine if we continue to evolve in this life because it's ever evolving. So for those of you who've been here for a while, and I see some familiar faces that I haven't seen in a long time, there is a good chance that you have evolved on this planet. If you're still here, if you're still working on yourself. As my beloved Pam Hurdy said, she came here as a young mother with two little kids. And they both grew up in this teaching. And I have to say, they're two amazing human beings. So did little Maddie grow up in this teaching. Can you imagine if you grew up in a teaching that didn't preach duality? Oh, my prayer partner, Terry Shea, he spoke last Sunday and he said, I blew them all away. He said most of them were older people, and they thought that their life was over. And he said, I'm telling you, your life's not over. If you're still breathing, you still got something to do here. And he said, it's not about creating a better dream for yourself. It's about finding meaning, purpose, and a way to serve in this world. So he said, we're not here to comfort the afflicted. We're here to afflict the comfortable. So they do a little session at the end of the service where people can talk to the minister. And this woman came up, and she was from the old way of thinking, and she was talking about the evil in the world. And he said, in non-dual teachings, you don't have evil and good. She said, well, there is evil out there. And I said to him, you're never going to convince her that there isn't evil because she believes in two powers, a power of good, a power of evil, and that they're vying off the powers of evil lead you astray and the powers of good. They've got that old God in the sky. So I said, you know, Terry, you're not going to convince someone who believes that way to believe in another way. He says, well, what should I say? I said, well, my teacher Llewellyn would say, you may be right. I don't see it that way, but you may be right. If you need a power of evil to tempt us, well, then you need a power of evil, but I don't. In oneness, how could we have two powers if there's only one? Well, you deal with it in any way you deal with it. The second week, I talked about living in a wholehearted way, because the mind isn't going to get you there, but the heart will, because the heart knows oneness. So could we, and I love that my beloved son Hal over there, he's finally figuring out how to put the head and the heart together. It's what His Holiness the Dalai Lama calls the bodhicitta. It's when love and intelligence come together, not in a dictating sort of way, but in a compatible, cohesive sort of way, coherent sort of way. You know, it's all about coherence. Are you in a coherent relationship? Are you in a flow? Someone was talking about they come to the center and their partner doesn't want to come, but they still come. And I've been married for 50 years, and do you ever see him here? Most of you don't even know what he looks like. And yet he's very, very devoted. I said to him once, why don't you come to the center? You need this message. And he says, oh, why do I need to come and hear you when I live with you? I said, well, you're probably right there. But you don't really listen to me at home, but that's okay. We all stand on what we stand on, and we stand for what we stand for, and we're not here to change anybody. And that's the illusion, that you're here to change somebody. We're here to work on ourselves, period, and to get closer to God, and ultimately to walk each other home. And the irony of that is, Michael, you're already there. So I asked myself, who wants to inspire me about standing on something? And it's my beloved Mark Nepo, this lovely Jewish man who wrote a book called The Way Under the Way. And through cancer and through meeting his adversities, he's found something to stand on, a truth, the gift that was in his soul. So the stuff that happened to us that wasn't very pleasant, that was probably the most sacred stuff of your life. So instead of saying I did something wrong because I got cancer, no. That cancer was a doorway to know something deeper about yourself. You know, I had the heart attack for some reason. And boy, did it give me a wake-up call. My beloved son over here had a stroke, a wake-up call for him. Anybody have a wake-up call out there? Oh, good. So here's what Mark Nepo says at the end of the book about that wake-up call, and it's really profound. He said, we each arrive with a gift hidden in a wound, and we have many years to birth it. Each is given a heart to carry and rough seas to calm it. Each is seated with a worthiness and love after love through which to accept it. And each of us is called to enter sorrow like an underwater cave with the breathless chance to break surface in the same world, now with everything aglow. We go into the darkness, we go into the deep, and we come out and we see with fresh eyes. By willingness to meet the wound, he goes on to say, if we make it this far, we can on any given day marvel that clouds are clouds and name ourselves anew. I'm not the victim anymore that I used to think of myself as. I'm seeing myself in a different way. We can use the gift that's born out of our wound to find an unmarked spot from which we now can live. So that the wound was a sacred wound. In the indigenous tribes, they say that the indigenous people would leave a flaw in their tapestry so that the soul could escape. So what if that wound, that flaw, is sacred? It's an opening for your own divinity. He's referencing this here. So he said, if we settle there, giving all without giving ourselves away, well, then the heart within our heart will flower and the whole world will drink of its nectar. I'll read that last sentence. If we settle there, giving our all without giving ourselves away, the heart within our heart will flower and the whole world will drink of its nectar. So could we have the courage to meet what we seem to think are our flaws? And instead of denying them and treating them away, we actually saw that there was a gift in that. There was a gift in my fear. There was a gift in my unworthiness. Because by facing the unworthiness, I was able then to meet it in a new way. Adam reminds me that we are haunted by our teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh. And he was such a... I was reading his book, Taming the Tiger Within, He said, until you tame this tiger within, you don't know what true peace is. And so we're always meeting ourselves. And so his whole mantra, and we taught this class here, The Art of Living, was to love those parts of ourselves that we've exiled, to be good to the little child within us that's afraid, that's anxious, that's angry. Oh, and here's how Thich Nhat Hanh so beautifully transmits his energy. I wanted you to hear his words because they're so powerful. You can see everything is underlined 3, 4, 5 times because I've read this book. So what happens when you're feeling pain, separation, pain of anxiety? He says, you say, hello, my pain. And then you breathe out. And then you say, I am here for you. I am here for you. Our breathing contains within it the energy of our pain. And so as we breathe with gentleness and compassion, we are embracing our pain with gentleness and compassion. I will be gentle with myself. I will be gentle with my heart. And I'll hold myself like a newborn baby child. And I'll only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. The Karen Drucker song. We'll play it sometime. So he goes on to say, be present for whatever arises in the moment. It is like a mother who's lovingly embracing her crying baby in her arms. The mother is mindfulness itself, and the crying baby is our suffering. So when we bring mindful awareness to our suffering child within ourselves, we're literally holding it. It's one thing to have the mother of two beautiful children, but it's another thing to mother yourself. I was talking to my little sister up in Oregon, and part of her recovery thing was to go to ACOA, Adult Children of Alcoholics, because our parents were alcoholic and she was wounded because of that upbringing. But she said, when I went to the ACOA meetings, she said what they all say was, you've got to love the wounded child within yourself. We all have a wounded child. And my sister's now 65 years old. And let me tell you, Pam, she's 5 years old. My twin sister used to say to me, Scott, she didn't grow up. She stayed like a little girl. And every time I talk to her, she's a little girl with me. Kind of like you are, Tia. I get to be with the little girl of my sister. So it's like the mother lovingly holding her suffering child. Okay, just the fact that the mother is embracing the baby is enough to help the baby suffer less. We don't need to know where the suffering is coming from. We just need to embrace the suffering. And that already brings some relief. As our suffering begins to calm down, we know that we will get through this. We will get through this. So his whole message is to embrace the suffering. So when fear comes up, I say, he says to me, oh, there you are, my little fear. Or when anger comes up, oh, there you are, my little anger. And so then by meeting it, I'm meeting it from a wholehearted awareness, and I don't have to act out on the anger. I don't have to scream at my neighbor and have a hissy fit and paint red paint on their truck. You know, I can lovingly go over and say, would you mind moving your truck? And maybe I'll create a harmonious relationship and find a friend that lives next door to me. I don't know. Or I could take out the orange paint and spray their truck and put it in my house. I'm just saying. Embrace our pain and suffering. To embrace it is an art form. To embrace your suffering is an art form. Anybody have a little suffering going on out there? Could we open to our suffering and say, this is here for me? I'm certainly being challenged with it. You know, with that shooting in Jacksonville, there was in Lake Arrowhead, one of the most beautiful resort areas in California. Gigi's been there, I'm sure. We did many spiritual conferences up there because it's so sacred. There was a lady who had the rainbow flags, and we have several at the center. She had them all over her store, and some angry soul went in there and shot the woman and killed her because she had the rainbow flags and say, we accept gay people here. So here's someone who was angry, and she is now dead. Could we not hide this under the rug? Could we say, this isn't acceptable anymore? I thought of taking all our little rainbow flags out of the church, and I thought, I am not going to be afraid because she had that experience. And yet, I'm not going to... We got to stop hating one another. I'm sorry. Anyway, Thich Nhat Hanh, water the seeds of hope in your consciousness. I underlined that 3 times. Water the seeds of hope. Some people say hope is an illusion, but I think hope is something that is so desired. I hope that we can love one another and get along with each other. And this is, okay, lastly, what would be the positive memories or experiences that you could call upon which would help you embrace and balance the energy of sorrow and despair when they come up? So could we find something in us? Maybe it's, you know what's such a consoling force in my life is my little pug. because he's so compromised. And whenever I get out of sorts, I just pick him up and hold him on my lap, and he snores. He can't smell. I mean, he smells. He can't see or hear, but he knows that I'm there, and he just starts to, and I entrain myself with him. So who would have thought I would be seeking my healing from a blind and deaf pug who can barely walk, but yet who gives me so much unconditional love? Is it that simple? Well, I think it is, because if we're all one, well, that's me too. And I sense I'm closer to him than I am to the young pup that's pulling you down the street. So I wish I was like Pepper, but I'm more like the pug. That's just me. I was given this on my birthday, the master teacher within. I think someone's trying to tell me something. James Twyman. And it's all about finding that teacher within yourself and then carrying it into the world. And that teacher is God. The teacher within us is God. It's what Paula was saying. Can I stretch up to the source? Well, you are source. So Paula is the one who, when she makes the commitment to source, well, then source takes over. So this whole thing is let the master teacher within lead the way. And here's how he puts it. We are all teachers of God because all there is God. So we're teachers. Now, what would God teach through you? Let's get the old God out of the way and know that it's all God. So the God of you. Surrender to the love that flows through us. Well, I think it's love. God is love. Love is a verb, and it's also a noun. Well, it's a noun and a verb. Maybe it's a present participle. Well, I think so. The role of the teacher of God is not a burden. It's a blessing. It's an opportunity to give and receive the love that's our natural inheritance. We're giving and receiving something that is what we are. We're just giving the love that we are, sharing it freely. It's the chance to help others remember who they truly are and to awaken to their own divinity. The God in me, when you do the namaste, the God in me sees the God in you. And in that place, we are one. There's only one here. So could we live in the namaste consciousness wherever we go? The homeless person on the side of the street, namaste, I see the God in you. The homeless dog by the homeless person, namaste, I see the God in you. The angry person that's shooting up the people and whatever, namaste, I see the God in you and I'm calling it forth. We're not here to hate one another anymore. That's over. The role of the teacher of God is not a burden, it's a blessing. So the call to be the teacher of God is a call to return home, the big H. And here's Thich Nhat Hanh. I have arrived, I am home. To know that you're already there, that you already are this space of divine love. And then you teach what you are. And then I hear Emerson, what you are speaks so loudly, I don't hear a thing you're saying. You can use that in two ways. I can say, the divinity of you, Anastasia, speaks so loudly, I don't hear a thing you're saying. And when you're on the pity pot, I don't hear it because I see the divinity in you shining forth, and that's who I identify with and always will. Well, he goes on to say, the call of the teacher of God is the call to return home. It's the call to remember your oneness with God in every moment and to share that remembrance with others. It's a call to be a miracle worker, to bring healing and transformation to the world that so sorely needs it. We are a transformational teaching. We are here to transform from the finite self that wails and suffers into an infinite presence that smiles and knows and is in a flow. The book of Muji, I was going to bring it today, I didn't bring it. He says, we're here to be in the flow of the One. The One is flowing through its creation, and it's in charge. And then you hear the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, who says, I am not the doer, or Jesus, I of myself do nothing. It's this power within that doeth the work. And what I do, you too shall do, and greater. So could we empower ourselves to be the teachers of God that we are as a blessing? So, it's a call to remember our oneness with God and to share this remembrance with others. So answer the call, dear teachers of God. The world is waiting for you. And then he wrote a little poem. You want to hear the poem? All you teachers of God out there, here's what he says. You are God's teacher, capital G, capital T, and this you must know. I promise it's true and always is so. This true fact may bring you joy or great fear, depending on your desire to be clear. The chains that bind your mind in perceptions, illusions that have gained false conceptions, but let it be known, these chains are not real, no weight or power, they only conceal. So don't get trapped in your stinking thinking. They're not real. They're just your stinking thoughts. And everybody's got some stinking thoughts out there. A whole mind, with a capital W, a whole mind is one free of such shackles, lifting instead to great tabernacles. That rhymes. God's curriculum is love. You will see. ego's alternative never will be. So a choice that brings despair and misery, a facade built up with false reality, yet you are a teacher of God, no less. And teaching love will free you from distress. I'll read that last sentence. You are a teacher of God, no less. And teaching love, with a capital L, will free you from distress. When we move into the love that we are, we're free from the distress that we've identified with, and we're no longer bound in the dream of me and my challenges. They become my blessings. So the invitation for all of us is to take these ideas into your life and practice them in a way that's relevant for you. So this Sunday, ask yourself, what do you stand on or stand in? Do you stand in an awareness that life is here serving us in the greatest way possible, and it requires that we open to this transformation that's always taking place? And in order to have a transformation, there needs to be a disillusion of something that's not real into a recognition of something that wants to give birth within us, a higher order of being, if you will, a higher order of awareness. I decided to close this with one of my gospels, this little book called The Gardener. And it's about an old gardener who has the young apprentices in the garden. And at the very end of his life, he's with his young apprentice, and he's telling the young apprentice, I guess that would be all y'all, to learn to the language of life as life preaches it. And so here's how he tells this young gardener how to listen to life when it's giving us these messages of growth. It's really beautiful. It's called The Language of Life. The gardener says, "It's time you were learning the language of life, my young friend." "The language of life," said the apprentice. "Well, what's that?" "It's the language that the world which surrounds you expresses itself in." He's ending a position. That's not good English. Oh, well. "The way the rest of the universe communicates with you. The language of the universe surrounds us and expresses itself within it. So he says, "I think I understand you," says the young boy. "With you, I've learned to read the trees and the flowers, to listen to the birds, to feel the insects, and to discover the hidden lesson in everything that surrounds me." In everything that surrounds me. There is no spot where God is not. So it's all a mute gospel, as Emerson would say. It's all preaching something. Could we listen and not react, Susan? Could we respond in a loving way? I'm just asking. Sometimes nature, life, tries to speak to us directly, to send us messages. "And how will I know that life is trying to send me something?" says the young person. And the old gardener said this, Nancy. "You will simply know. You will simply know when life is giving you a message that you need to hear." The gardener answered, "There is something within everyone that lets them know that what has just happened means something. Something important. And that one has to decide." We're always at choice point. Someone said in our revealing circle, I think it was Hal, "Choose you this day. Am I going to respond from love and gratitude, or am I going to react from, hell no, it ain't so?" Well, guess what? It is so. So he goes on to say to the young man, "Coincidences do not exist. There are no accidents in this universe. It's all in divine order, Miss Sylvia, all of it. Coincidences don't exist. And when something happens that calls our attention in that special way, it's because there's a message that we need to hear." I often say, and this is one of my mantras, teach me and show me the way. So when all my buttons get pushed and I find myself in a reactive mode or in some kind of resistance, Ms. Tia, I say, teach me and show me the way. What is life showing me here? She knows me. She's my Anamkara over there. We have an agreement here. "And how does one read those messages?" the younger person asked. "Well, this is not easy, Seth. How do you read how do you find the answers when it's..." Okay, this is what the gardener says to the young apprentice. "You read these messages, my dear friend," he said, "not with your head, but with your heart. The language of life is in some ways similar to the language of dreams. It speaks in images that make an impact on our heart, images that create clear sensations that allow your mind to open up to a deeper understanding." If you want to see some images, go see Barbie. We saw her the other day, and boy, you talk about images and metaphors. Do we want a macho male Ken running the world where everybody's fighting everybody? Or do we want something in pink and happy and loving? Now, there are shadow sides to Barbie because Barbie had to evolve and grow, but there was such a deep message of the evolution of consciousness and the androgyny of the soul. We're both male and female. It's not a Barbie or a Ken. It's a Carby or a Ben. No, I'm just saying. When the heart is prepared to listen, nothing happens. It just because it feels like it. When the heart learns to listen, nothing happens. It's not accidental. It's here as a great teacher for us. So he concludes this lovely little message for the young boy. He said, oh, this is the young man saying, I think I understand you, said the apprentice, but I would need time to be able to read clearly this language of life. And the gardener looked at him. He's probably my age, and he's quite young, probably your age, Seth. And he said to the young man, you have all the time in the world, my young fellow. Make use of it. Make use of it. Open your heart to life and listen to it. And the messages will become clear to your soul under the pleasant role of silence. Well, we're going right back to silence, aren't we? It'll become clear to you in the pleasant role of silence. So we started in silence and we get to end in silence. Thank you. So we end where we started, a ringing of the bell, which is a returning to that sacred space of now, to the breath within the breath, to that silence, where we get to know God and ourselves as one. The knower lives in the silence. So when we find ourselves in life where we don't have a clue, that's a good place to be. And so we can surrender into this heart space that knows. And out of that deep silence, a clarity begins to flower. There are no coincidences or accidents in life. And so what life is bringing has a gift in it, truly. It may be the sacred wound that's showing us our resilience in life. And so we meet life on life's terms, and we learn to listen with an open heart. And we journey one step at a time, because that's all we truly have, is one step at a time. And we let that step be sacred as we walk this planet that is sacred to us. And so every step, every breath is a declaration of the soul saying, I have arrived, I am home. In present moment awareness, where I find meaning, I find truth, and I live in kindness. I live in a wholehearted manner. I let love lead the way, because I stand on truth, and I stand for an authentic life lived out loud, trusting that this divine intelligence, this divine love, is assisting each one of us with every breath as we assume the consciousness that's required to take the next step in mindful awareness that we are being held in the arms of grace, forever safe in the arms of love. I truly know that. I accept that for everyone here. Take a deep integrating breath and give a sigh for the divine. Let's put our hands over our heart and say to this presence within and all around, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the flowering of the soul of the one. Outpicturing in beauty.
Revealed through mystery.
Expressing through spontaneity. Alive in creativity,
outrageously free,
unfettered in every way,
ready to take that next step,
knowing that we are divinely guided.
Adventure is yet to be.
It's always happening.
Right now.
Ain't it sweet?
And
so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new